المصطفى محمد. وعلى أهل بيته الأطيبين الأنجبين بهم نتولى ومن أعدائهم نتبرأ إلى الله. اللهم كن لوليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة، وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا، حتى تسكنه أرضك توعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا. Yesterday we talked about this issue of the presentation of files, which was mentioned in Surah Al-Mutaffifin, saying that kalla inna kitab al-abrar lafi 'illiyyin wa ma adraka ma 'illiyyun kitabun marqum, that the performance report of these good people, of the pious, will be presented before Allah, and it is going to be as such as yashhaduhu al-muqarrabun, that those who are near, that is like Amirul Mu'mineen, like the Prophet, like the Ma'sumeen, like the Salihin, they, upon looking at this performance report of Mu'mineen, they will be proud. They will boast upon this great performance. So on that topic, among the things which helps a lot in this performance report being mighty and weighty, as a result of which yashhaduhu al-muqarrabun, the Prophets, the Ma'sumeen, they will be proud of, it's the recitation of salawat. There is a report wherein says that on the day of judgment, it will be as such that the scale, the balance will be there, and everyone will be invited, and the a'mal will be placed in that scale. So it's going to be a simple formula. Whichever is heavier, based upon that, the hell and the heaven will be assigned. And the custodian of that hell is Malik. A person steps, and there, according to the criteria that is there, that you have to place your a'mal and the deeds and actions when they were placed, sees that this person, his negative actions were more. And based upon the instructions given to Malik, says that your destination is the hell. And there on that balance, near that balance, is Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. He from his pocket takes out an envelope and places that envelope onto the scale. And again, the actions that were good become heavier, much heavier than the bad actions of that person. And upon the instructions given to Malik, he says, now the good performance is more. So based upon that, to this person, the heaven has to be assigned, and he is sent to the heaven. And then he inquires, what was in that envelope that you placed, O Prophet? He says that the salutations, the salawat, which mu'mineen recite throughout their lifetime, they are recorded, registered, deposited in a special account with the Prophet. And in time of need, and the time of need is the day of judgment, when a person is to be assigned the hell or the heaven, says on that day, when it will be the time of need, these special deposits which you had during your lifetime will be given back to you. So that is the reward of that salawat that is recited upon Rasulullah and his household. Now that is for the hereafter. Now even in this dunya, this salawat, it has miraculous effects. In these sacred days of this month of Ramadan, it is recommended that you recite this salawat at least 100 times every day. And it doesn't take a long time, just a few minutes, 6 minutes, 7 minutes, and you can do it. It has miraculous effects even in this dunya. Among the persons who were in the study circle of Marhum Imam Khomeini, Ayatollah Gulpaygani, so on and so forth, the ulama of that batch who lived about 100 years ago, 80 years ago, they say that there was a person who lived there and he possessed a fragrance which did not resemble to any perfume, any fragrance in this dunya. And it was such that whenever he passed in the lanes, in the streets, that fragrance was felt by everyone. And when he came to someone's house, he didn't need to knock the door. That fragrance was so beautiful that everyone knew that who is at the door. Everyone wanted to know, but no one had the guts to ask him. There was this one person, he says, once I had the courage to ask him, what is this perfume, what is this fragrance, this smell you have? It doesn't resemble to anything in this dunya, nor is it available in any of the markets today. He says that once, now, in our day-to-day life, we have people, some of them are very good in reciting du'as. Some in Quran, they recite Quran a lot. Some do a lot of prayers. Some do a lot of adhkar, like la hawla wa la quwwata, like la ilaha illallah, etc., etc. So we have da'imus dhikr, da'imus salawat. And some people are da'imus salawat, that they constantly recite salawat. Says that, now, this person, he constantly recited salawat. Now, how many thousands a day? No one knows. But his lips, whenever they moved for the recitation of this salawat. He says that once, I had a dream, I saw Rasulullah in my dream. A majlis when 50, 60 people were seated, and one of them was myself. And then Rasulullah, he inquires, poses the question, that which one of you recites the most salawat on me? He said to himself, I do recite, but there might be someone who recites more than me. And again the same question was asked, and again with the same answer which he had in his heart, he didn't stand up. For the third time Rasulullah inquires, and again he never answers, and no one else in that majlis answers. He says that Rasul, he stood up, came to me and kissed me, and as a result of that kiss of Rasulullah, this is the fragrance that was blessed to me in this dunya. So these things, they have a miraculous effect even in this dunya. Lucky are those who can benefit. We recited a few phrases from Dua Iftitah yesterday and day before yesterday, which talked about the rule of Imam al-Asr. It says, Allahumma inna narghabu ilayka fi dawlatin karima, that, O God, we desire in that rule of Imam al-Asr, in that dawlatin karima, that just rule, we desire that you enlist us among the supporters of Islam and Muslims, and that you defame kufr and nifaq, infidelity and hypocrisy, and that you enlist us among those who call and invite your people to the right path, to the right way, and that وَتَرْزُقْنَا بِهَا كَرَامَةَ الدُّنْيَا وَالْآخِرَةَ, and as a result of those actions of ours, and that is, are adapting in accordance to the sayings and preachings of your custodian, bless us a good dunya and akhirah, a benevolent dunya and a benevolent akhirah. Over here in this dua, you find that two paths have been laid in front of us. You have a path, a way which belongs to Waliyullah, which is Imam al-Asr, which is the Ma'soom. And you have a path, a way which belongs to that kufr and to the nifaq, which is the hypocrisy and infidelity. So it's two paths, there's no midway. It's either Allah or it's shaitan. It's either Imam or it's those who stood against the Imam. There is no midway. So this is something which we have to look into ourselves, that how much and to which path do we adapt? Is it the right one or the left one? Or if you look into this Ayatul Kursi, which we recite, says Allahu waliyyul ladhina amanu, that Allah is the wali, is the custodian, is the friend of those who have faith. And again, in that same Ayatul Kursi, you come to a point, says that waladhina kafaru awliya'uhum at-taghut. So you have those who stand against Allah, their custodians are these taghut, are this kufr. So one path, one way is of Allah, the other belongs to shaitan. So one side you have Ali, on the other you have Muawiyah. On one side you have Hussein, on the other side you have Yazid. And the same thing will be with the 12th Imam when he comes. On one side he will be there and opposing him will be Sufyani. There is no midway. We have to look into ourselves that do we adapt totally to the Imam or do we not? If we don't, then that is a danger zone. Because those on the midways, it's not guaranteed. Now those on the right, again, they are not guaranteed to stay right until the end. Now those who are on the midway, they are more prone towards destruction and towards being misled than those who are on the right path. We have to choose which one. Is it the Imam or it's the enemies of the Imam? We can't say that because Amirul Mu'mineen, he recited prayers really good, we'll say our prayers behind Ali, but when it comes to the food and the table, we'll eat it with Muawiyah because his table is more colorful. We can't pick and choose that way. Sometimes you find this definition among the Muslims, among the Mu'mineen, they say that we are a low profile Muslim. A low profile Muslim, it's no category. It's either a Muslim or no Muslim. So we don't have a low profile. So low profile, it's a danger zone. We can't accept it. So we'll pick and choose a few of the things which Allah has said, which are designer made, which taste our needs and requirements, and all the others, we'll just put them aside. That is a danger zone. So we have to be very careful. We have all gathered here to remember the Shuhada of Uhud, to remember Hazrat Khadija, salamullah alayha. Now, in all these battles where so many Shuhada gave away their life, we have to analyze and see what was the cause of that battle. Why did they have to die? Why did so many people die right from the day one and even today? What was the reason for that? For example, among the things that can be mentioned here that will ease the whole topic to understand is, for example, why did Sayyid al-Shuhada move? Why did he fight Yazid? What was the reason? This question might come to our minds. What was the reason? If Yazid was a bad person, then let him be bad. There are so many other bad people in this community. He also one of them. To understand this, we could put it this way, that for example, if in a community, before coming to that, there is an ayah in Quran says that وَذَرُوا ظَاهِرَ الْإِسْمِ وَبَاطِنَ, that the sins that we do, it is not as such that it's just a sin which I have done. That sin, it is in layers. It has its effects and it will affect. And those effects can be seen here in this dunya, in barzakh and in qiyamah. If you look into Quran, it says that the a'mal that we do, may they be good or may they be bad, they will take a form, they will be presented before us in a form. For example, it is reported in a hadith that if you have memorized Quran during your lifetime, make it as such that those surahs and those ayat of Quran, you remember them until the last day of your life. Otherwise, you will regret. Why? Says that on the day of judgment, when a lofty position will be given to this person in the heavens, there he will come across forms and faces and people over there so beautiful that he would wish to be with them in the heavens. And then he says that he sees these people who are so acquainted and known to him and says that they look familiar to me. And then they will be told, yes, for example, that is that Surah Ar-Rahman which you had memorized in dunya, but you forgot later on. Had you memorized and that memory was with you until the last moment of your life, he would have been your associate in the hereafter. So that would be a means of regret, that if we know something and we don't keep it with us, we will regret in the hereafter. So that good job or that good task that we had done in this dunya will take a beautiful form in the hereafter. The same thing is with the grave, that many a times you find that people who are of a bad temper or who use swear language, bad language, foul language, which is the fashion nowadays to utter and say, which is all filth and trash. Now that trash, that bad language will be a bad associate in the grave. Sometimes it will be presented in this form and the shape of a dog who will be with us until the day of judgment. Now it is all frightening, scary, and inshallah, if we get some time, we will touch that topic as well. So Quran says that وَذَرُوا ظَاهِرَ الْإِسْمِ وَبَاطِنَهُ, that sins, you have to put them aside. May that be the sin itself or the inner self of a sin. As if sins, they are all in layers. You have to put them all aside. Elsewhere in a report in Nahj al-Balagha, Amir al-Mu'mineen, he says that أَشَدُّ الظُّنُوبِ مَسْتَخَفَّ بِهِ صَاحِبُهُ, that the worst and the strongest of all sins are the sins which the person committing says that it's little, it's small, it's tiny. Or elsewhere says, مَسْتَحَانَ بِهِ صَاحِبُهُ, he says that's nothing, that's a tiny sin. It was just a little smile, it was just a handshake with a girl, or it was just a McDonald's burger, it wasn't nothing. It was just one munch or one kiss, example. Now all that little, and when I say and come up with excuses, that's tiny, that's small, Amir al-Mu'mineen says that that is the biggest sin that a person has committed. Now to understand this great saying of Amir al-Mu'mineen, we could put it this way. For example, if you are walking in the street, now no one walks in America, everyone drives. If you are walking in the street, and then if you hit someone, you hit someone and that person hasn't been hurt at all, no scratches, nothing at all. But you just walk on, carry on with your way. And on the contrary, again, if you hit someone, you break his arm, for example, or you damage his possessions, but then you get up and say sorry to that person, although you've hurt him, you've broken his arm, but that sorry and seeking pardon of yours from that person, he will forgive you and at the same time will become your friend. But on the first, in the first case, you didn't hurt him, nothing went wrong, but because of that pride of you not saying to that person, he may be offended with you until the last day. To understand this, multiply it by infinity, Allah also acts in the same way. That if someone has done wrong, no matter what wrong, and says sorry to him, he forgives. And if someone doesn't say sorry to Allah, even for that tiny sin, which Amir al-Mu'mineen says that مَسْتَخَفَّ بِهِ صَاحِبُ, that this person has done and says that that's small, that's tiny, and he doesn't say sorry to Allah, because of that pride which is in that person, he also won't forgive. So we have to create that, or if it does exist in us, we have to polish that quality of saying sorry to Allah. Saying sorry is tawbah, is repentance. And repentance is a good quality. May that be in this dunya, among the friends, among the mu'mineen, among the associates. And when that habit is there, that we constantly keep saying sorry for all the wrong that we do, it's easier to say sorry to Allah. And if that doesn't exist in us, then saying sorry to Allah also, it's tough. So, أَشَدُّ الظُّنُوبِ مَسْتَخَفَّ بِهِ صَاحِبُهُ, and أَشَدُّ الظُّنُوبِ مَسْتَحَانَ بِهِ صَاحِبُهُ. So it was said that to understand the concept of why, for example, Sayyid al-Shuhada, he fought Yazid, was it because he sinned, he was a womanizer, he drank, he, for example, all those trash and filth which existed in his life, was it for that reason? To understand it, we could put it this way. For example, someone in the community, he drinks. It's a sin he's committing. And there is a second person, he drinks. In addition to that, he's got his own brewery. He makes all that different types of wines. And a third person in the same community, now he's got a research center. He researches to come up with a new type of drink, with a new flavor. Again, that's another sin being committed. So first one, he does a sin himself. The second one, on a larger scale. The third one, on a very large scale. And if you just assume another person who is in the community who wants to make a culture wherein wining and dining become part and parcel of an entity of every household, definitely the sin of the fourth is the largest. Imam, he fought Yazid because Yazid wanted to come up with a culture, wanted to change everything, wanted to revamp whatever the Prophet has taught. That is, good to be taken the place of evil, evil to be taken the place of good. Now, this is something which we see even today, that many of these things which used to be bad, for example, 20 years ago, or very bad about 50 years ago, they have changed, they have taken the place of good. Even when we talk, all these different words that we used to once assume as negative words are being used today in positive way. For example, wicked. Wicked used to be an evil word, but today wicked, when you say it, means lovely, wonderful. So there are many other things. Or when you come up with these relationships of boys and girls, so when they want to put a halal flavoring in it, they say it's a fiancé and a fiance. Ya mangeta, namzad. All that is haram. It doesn't make anyone halal on each other. So all this is the changing of something that was halal in the place of haram. Or for example, Aliyaz Billah, this homosexuality that has come across, that used to be bad, and it is bad, and no one accepts. But that is promoted and accepted as something which is legal, lawful, and marriages take place in churches. Now what is this? It's all filth that was bad being taking place in of good. Yazid also was doing the same thing. Or for example, if you see today, hijab, it's good. How come in a sterile environment, in a court where everyone is secure with all those security guards, in the presence of a judge, a pregnant woman comes up and she is stabbed 18 times and is killed in the courtroom in Germany, but no one says anything. And when the husband steps forward to help her, his wife, he also is shot. So that is a good which is being promoted as bad. So good takes place of bad, bad and which is evil takes the place of good. For this reason, when Sayyid al-Shuhada sees that all those painstaking efforts of his grandfather, of his father, of this revelation of Quran that was taught and brought and promoted in a community, it's all being changed. And how did Muawiyah and Yazid do that? Very cleverly, because Muawiyah was known to be very clever. He worked slowly, gradually, and he filled the hearts of people with filth and hatred to Ahlul Bayt. What he did, when he came up, when he was in his rule, and he found that everyone loves Ali, his attitude, his akhlaq, his teachings, the way he deals with people, everyone loves. And he had to promote this hatred of Ali in the hearts of people. What he did, to every household, now we have pets nowadays, everyone has a toy, but in those days there were no toys. Kids, they used to play with lambs, with chickens, hens, etc. So they were the pets. To every household, Muawiyah, he sends a baby lamb and says, this is a gift from Muawiyah to every household. And the children, as they grew, the lamb also grew, and that lamb becomes part of the family as a pet. A few years pass, and now Muawiyah instructs everyone to go and get that lamb back. When you get that back, children are going to cry, that's my pet, it's my animal, I want it back. And when they say that, when they start pleading and crying, snatch it from them and tell them it's Ali who wants it back from you. So that way, hatred of Ali, he planted it in the hearts of children of that time. And that way he promoted his indecent desires which he had throughout his. So on one side we have makers of a culture which is good, like Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, like his father Amir al-Mu'mineen, like our 12th Imam. And we have makers of a culture which is bad, like Muawiyah, like Yazid, who want to revamp everything which is good to be taken the place of, to take the place of everything which is bad. As-salawatum. And it was happening as such that the values that existed, like piety was a good value. Being truthful is a good value. He promoted all this as bad, and lying becomes part and parcel of an entity. Wining and dining becomes good, part of a lifestyle which we find today. It is the month of Ramadan, and it was mentioned in the past nights that it is the month wherein the host is Allah. He has hosted, invited everyone. In reality, the host is the 12th Imam. Why? Because the chief guest of this feast or this table that has been laid by Allah, the chief guest is the Ma'soom himself. A month wherein Quran is revealed. Quran itself cannot guide us. For that Quran to guide, it needs a spokesman, and that is the Ma'soom. And today that spokesman of Quran is Imam al-Asr. So that Quran with that Imam together are there in this month of Ramadan. And we have to try and do something that we get closer and nearer to them in these nights, so that it would be easier for us to perceive Laylatul Qadr. And that is by way of knowing them. If you remember, a hadith was mentioned that Man adraka Fatima faqad adraka Laylatul Qadr, that whosoever perceives Fatima has indeed perceived Laylatul Qadr. So the same thing is over here. Whosoever knows Imam al-Asr can perceive Laylatul Qadr. So we have to try and do something so that we come closer to the Imam, so that it becomes easier for us to witness this Laylatul Qadr. Now Laylatul Qadr, it's a few hours a night, so that if someone does witness that night, he jumps 80 years ahead in that just one night, which is a great bonus. In the reports, in riwayat, you all have heard, we have a time which is known as Akhiruz Zaman. Akhiruz Zaman is the end of time, and it's going to be a tough time. It's going to be a time full of conspiracies, deviations, afflictions, bala, atrocities upon people, and it's going to be very tough for a person to protect and save his iman. In the riwayat that we have, that Akhiruz Zaman is also known as the time of Hayra. Hayra means confusion. It's going to be a time of confusion. People will be confused. They wouldn't be able to judge what is right from what is wrong. It's going to be very difficult. Or elsewhere, the Prophet, he says that لَهُ تَكُونُ لَهُ غَيْبَةٌ وَحَيْرَةٌ تَذِلُّ فِيهَا أَقْوَامٌ, that to the Imam, who is the Imam of our time, he will have a ghaiba, an occultation, and he will have a hayra, and in that confusion, people, nations, they will be misled, they will be misguided, they will lead astray. But those who are mukhlis, but those who are sincere, who stood with the Imam, who were with the Imam, they will remain with the Imam. Now we have to do and train ourselves. Among the ulama that we have today, it's Haj Agha Buzurg-e-Tehrani, who lives in Tehran, written many, many books. He says that there are about 30 books that have been written till now on the malahim wal fitan, on these fitnas that we have today in this Akhiruz Zaman. And never was there a time in the entire history of mankind when so many afflictions, so many problems, so many bala, or in easier words, never mankind faced so much of kufr and shirk and hypocrisy as we are facing today. Or in other words, we could put it this way, that shaitan, he has thrown all of his spears and arrows and he has attacked or an ambush with full force. Why is that? Because the reports say that Akhiruz Zaman, it is going to be the time when shaitan will die, will come to an end. And because shaitan knows that he has to come to an end, someone who knows, and if he wants to survive, it is by all this mess which he creates, which all this zulm and tyranny and fasad and fitna which he creates in this dunya, the more it is, the later the imam will come. The quicker everything is got together, everything is put right, the quicker imam will come. He knows it. For that reason, he has attacked now with full force and has thrown all his ammunition against the imam, against that path which imam is going to lead. So akhir al-zaman, it's the time, which maybe we are in that time, and we ask Allah to put things right so that the imam comes. Now this is something which Quran says, that shaitan, he, when he stood against Allah but not bowing down before Adam, he says, فَانْذِرْنِي إِلَىٰ يَوْمِ يُبْعَثُونَ. That says that, oh God, give me respite, give me some time, let me mislead all of your creations, of your mankind. And Allah says, all right, I will give you time. You have that leisure, but until that time. And then says that you can't just misguide and mislead everyone. Those who are mukhlis and sincere, إِلَّا عِبَادَكَ مِنْهُمُ الْمُخْلَصِينَ, you can never do any harm to them. Among the issues that we have in the end of time, there is a report from Rasulullah. He says that a time will come. Now before that, we said that shaitan, he is in full force. He is misleading everyone and everything. We have reports, and you have heard, that imam, when he comes, he possesses all the qualities which all of the prophets possessed. All the good attributes that were possessed by each one of the prophets, all of them are in one imam. Or sometimes it is said that all the miracles that were given to all of the prophets, imam will use all of those miracles, he alone. Why is that? Why not only the miracle that was given to Prophet Musa, which was his stick, his asa? Why not just one? Based upon the wisdom and the mess that we see that has been created by shaitan to put things right with in ordinary circumstances, it's not going to be feasible for the imam. When shaitan, he has attacked and opened fire in full force, the counterbalance also has to be in full force. And that's why the reports say that alayhi kamalu Musa, baha'u Isa, sabru Ayyub, etc., etc. He has that perfection of Prophet Musa. He's got that beauty of Prophet Isa. And he has that sabr and patience of Ayyub, etc., etc. And all of those qualities which they all possessed, he possesses himself. So, Salman, among the companions of Rasulullah, he comes to him and he says that Rasul is upset. And he says that, what is the reason of your distress, Ya Rasulullah? Says, a time will come when people will stop Amr bil Ma'ruf and Nahya anil Munkar. A time will come when no one will say what is right and what is wrong. Salman, he is amazed that, is that possible, Ya Rasulullah? Inviting someone to good, it is in their own benefit. Or telling someone not to do something, it is because he is harming himself. When he is said not to do, it's to protect himself. When he is said to do, it is for his own benefit. Will that time come? How is it possible? He is amazed. And Rasulullah says that not just that, a time will come when people will command each other to evil. A person will come and say to do that sin, another person will come and say, don't do that right. Salman, he's amazed. Is that possible, Ya Rasulullah? And Rasulullah says that that's nothing. A time will come when munkar will take the place of ma'ruf. Bad will take the place of good. Good will take the place of bad. Now this is something which we see today, that all this trash that we have today, especially when it comes to the internet or the televisions, all this music, what and what not, all that is trash, which is bad. How come this thing which is so bad takes the place of good? Respecting parents, being kind to them, being good to them, it's good. It's for our own benefit and for the benefit of the parents. How come that becomes bad? that if the parent says, don't do, you call 911. How come? Something which is so bad takes the place of good, and something which is so good takes the place of bad. So that is Akhiru Zaman. And again, you come across this term, Dajjal. What is Dajjal? We have to be very careful when it comes to understanding the sayings of Ma'asumeen, as we have to be careful when it comes to understanding the verses of Quran. Many a times, ayat of Quran, they interpret other ayahs of Quran. Some ayat give you the tafsir of some other. The same way, some ahadith of Ma'asumeen, they make you understand some other ahadith of Ma'asumeen. And again, when it comes to accepting these ahadith, the reports, they are so strong that you cannot just take any statement from anyone. It has to be from the right sources. For example, when it comes to the concept of Dajjal, what we have heard is that he is going to be a person, a human being, with a one eye in his forehead, whose food and feast is going to be as huge as a mountain, and he is going to be someone who's going to claim, as Fir'aun claimed, Ana Rabbukumul A'la. Now, 2-3 weeks ago, there were all these emails that were sent from everywhere that a baby has been born with just one eye in his forehead, just a warning to everyone that Dajjal has been born. So it's not as simple as that. That if it was just a human being with one eye in his forehead and then eating a food as huge as a mountain and then claiming to be God. Dajjal, it's a system. It's a whole conspiracy which stands against Waliyullah. When in the reports it says that it's an existence, a being with just one eye in the forehead, it could be interpreted in this way, that sees only material stuff. Morality, no. God doesn't exist. When they say that in God we trust, in God we trust, yeah, it's a good slogan, but there's no whisper at all with God at all. When it comes to dunya, it's just gobble it all in one go. God doesn't exist. That is the system which deceives you, which cheats you, or in a more appropriate term, we could say that it is the slavery of the modern time. In the ancient days, there were slaves. They used to go to all these different continents, bring people and sell them. Nowadays, they do it in a more fashionable, designed, and a digital way. A system is made where in the system, everyone gets stuck. There's no way to move around. That is the system, that is the Dajjal, that has got a one eye, means that just a one eye to the material world, no eye to the other side. And when it comes to saying that eats has an appetite as big as a mountain, well, no one eats that. If it was a monster, then it's easier to tackle a monster. It's no monster. It's a system. For example, with reference to Hollywood, they say that they produce 600 to 700 films every year. Especially when it comes to action movies. Now, what are these action movies? Action movies are a type of hypnotism to our children. When they watch these movies, can you call them? They won't answer. Even if they watch them, they don't blink their eyes. So much hypnotized and so much drowned they are. And the basis of these films is two things, two elements. One is violence. Second, indecency and sex. That is what is to be promoted. At the end of the film, you've got that mind which has been brainwashed by at the end of that two hours of movie. And they say that they've got a net profit of $15 billion every year, which is huge. And they invest a lot so that these children, they are carried away from them. So this way, it's easier to understand. A system which only sees material world, which has got an appetite, which is they've got an investment huge, large, just to misguide people, put everyone on the wrong track, And then claims to be أنا ربكم الأعلى, as Pharaoh did, that I am the mighty and the exalted God of yours. Now this claim can be seen in the books. And again, if you look into the whole conspiracy of Yahud that we have in Quran, and again, in their own books, they say that Yahud are the superior nation. They are the superior nation. Everyone else, they are humans. They are animals in the form of humans. So much so, say that if you can get rid of them, get rid of them. If you could get rid of them with a stone, don't use your sword. Because using your sword when you can use your stone, it's wasting your sword and it will make it blunt. So that is the system. And Bani Israel have been the most notorious nations throughout history. Most of the prophets were killed by them. So that is something which is the concept of Dajjal, which is mentioned in a hadith. Whenever they say that it's going to be a human being with a one eye in the forehead, it means a system which only looks at the material world, has no eye and no sight to anything but the material world. Salawat. In this dua iftitah which we just recited, and in that ayatul kursi that was mentioned, says that you've got awliyaullah and then you've got awliyaul shaitan. So you've got on one side friends and custodians of Allah, and on the other side you've got friends and custodians of shaitan. In this time, which is the time of Hayra, as mentioned by Rasulullah, what do we do? Marhum Ayatullah al-Uzma Marashi, among the great ulama of our time, who passed in 1996, at the age of 96 years of age. He, an old man, a very pious person, coming out of his house every Fajr, he says to his students that, I ask Allah, by the presence of 14 ma'soom, to protect my iman when I go back at lunchtime to my house. So when he says, that great person, that may Allah protect my iman, that is just for those few hours, we don't know what's going to happen in this time of all this mess, how do we protect our iman? In a report, ma'soom, he says that this dua should be recited constantly, and that is, Allahumma arrifni nafsak. O God, make yourself known to me. فَإِنَّكَ إِنْ لَمْ تُعَرِّفْنِي نَفْسَكَ. If you do not make yourself known to me, لَمْ أَعْرِفْ رَسُولَكَ. I will never be able to know your Rasul. And if you don't make me know your Rasul, I can never know who the Imam is. And if I don't know who the Imam is, then definitely I will be misled and astray. So Allah guide me. Or again, if you look into this adhan and iqama, which we say Allahu Akbar four times, and then we say Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, and then say Ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah. That is, first we remind ourselves of Allah, and then we say that we bear witness that Rasul is the Prophet of Allah. The same thing can be seen in Ziyaratul Jami'at al-Kabira, that whenever you intend to address one of the ma'sumeen, address it with this Ziyaratul Jami'ah. And before that, recite Takbir, which is Allahu Akbar, 100 times. That way, you strengthen your faith with Allah, and then ask Allah, but by the mediation of ma'sumeen, you get connected to Allah. So we have to try and do something that in these days, which are the days of the sacred month of Ramadan, we get nearer and closer to Allah, and it is all a lesson to myself. And in this khutbah of Sha'baniyya, which was recited by Rasulullah on the last Friday of the sacred month of Ramadan, he says that, addressing Amir al-Mu'mineen, says that, Ya Rasulullah, ma afdalul a'mal fi hadha shahr. Ya Rasulullah, in this sacred month, what is the best action? What is the best deed? What do I do? What is the best? He says, Ya Aba al-Hasan, afdalul a'mal fi hadha al-shahr al-wara'u an maharim Allah. That in this sacred month, the best action and the best deed would be to keep away from all that which Allah has said to be haram. Keep yourself away. And if someone was strong enough to keep himself away from sins in this sacred month of Ramadan, it will be easier for him to control himself after this sacred month of Ramadan. So we have all got together here to remember the Shuhada of Uhud and also Hazrat Khadija Salamullah Alayha. Rasulullah, whatever he gained during his lifetime was a result of the investment of Hazrat Khadija Salamullah Alayha. And in reports he says that nothing benefited me more than the wealth that was given to me, that was given by Khadija herself. And in looks, she resembles Hazrat Zainab the most. That's what the reports say. And again, if you look into the tragedy which unfolds on the day of Ashura, and again, when Hazrat Khadija passes away, Rasulullah, he is disturbed a lot, because in a gap of just 3 days, two of his most beloved and those who supported him the most, they pass away. Hazrat Abu Talib on one side, and in a few days, Hazrat Khadija also, she passes away. For him, it was a great loss, and names that year as Amul Huzn, as the year of sorrow, year of sadness. But if you look into the funeral that takes place for both of them, it was an honorable funeral that Rasulullah himself, he lays them to rest and he observes that mourning for them. If you look into Karbala, the scenario is different. All the five members of Ashabi Kisa, including the Prophet of Islam, he dies in that most wretched way, he is laid to rest, being the first person of Islam on whom this Quran is revealed, wherein the angels frequent in his house, he is laid to rest only by Amirul Mu'mineen. Or when Amirul Mu'mineen passes away, he again, being the Imam of the time, is laid to rest at night, so that those Mala'in, they don't attack him. Or when Imam Mujtaba is to be laid to rest in his funeral services, they shoot arrows at them, again at night. And worst of all, it's Sayyid al-Shuhada. In one of these majalis that was held in the house of marhum Ayatullah Mirza Shirazi, the one who issued the fatwa of where he abandoned and made tobacco haram on the Shia world, he says that there was a majlis that was held in his house. The reciter of that majlis is marhum Ayatullah Sheikh Hassan Ali Isfahani. And when he comes in the masaib that we have, there is a term which says that Dakhalat Zainab bint Ali ala ibn Ziyad. That Zainab, the daughter of Ali, she entered the court of Ibn Ziyad. Now that sentence, it has nothing to cry, that Zainab enters the court of Ibn Ziyad. That great personality, Mirza Shirazi, he says, stop. That one sentence is enough for us to cry upon Zainab. And then what is the reason behind that? Zainab, she enters the court of Ibn Ziyad, nothing to cry. But for that great personality who possesses that ma'rifah, for him it's a lot. Says Zainab, who is all piety. Zainab, who is all hijab. Zainab, the daughter of Amirul Mu'mineen, the granddaughter of Rasulullah. Zainab, who never came out. Zainab, whose neighbor says that for 7 years I was her neighbor, not once did I ever see her. No one says how she looks, how she resembled. Zainab, that strong woman who was with her brother until the last moment of his life, she coming into the court of Ibn Ziyad, that is a disaster, and it needs a lot to cry. Ala la'natullah ala al-qawm al-zalimin wa sayya'lamu al-lazina zalamu ayya munqalabin yanqalabun. Allahumma aghnina bihalalika an haramik wa bita'atika an ma'asiyatik wa bifadlika an man siwak. For those who are ill and ailing, for those who have requested for dua, for those who are facing whatsoever problems, for those who have sponsored the iftar for tonight, may Allah accept from each one of them biqabul and hasan. May Allah expedite the reappearance and arrival of our Imam, our Master, our Hujjah, and may he enlist us among his best supporters and servants. May he protect our children from every indecency, from all these fitnas and balas, and may he enlist them among the best Muslims who ever existed. For all marhumin, for all mu'mineen and mu'minat, and especially those who are facing problems, we'll recite this ayah a few times. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. أَمَّنْ يُجِيبُ الْمُضْطَرَّ إِذَا دَعَاهُ وَيَكْشِفُ السُّوءَ 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 لِأَرْوَاحِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ وَالْمُؤْمِنَاتِ. And especially for Munir al-Nisa Begum and all those who have requested for Fatiha, a Fatiha with a loud salawat.